amidst all the drama of Parshas Vayigash, and it really is a very dramatic Parsha, this manipulation of Yosef, manipulating his brothers in order for those dreams to be fulfilled, and then his caving in to his love for his brothers, and the decision of Yosef to be sensitive to his brother's suffering rather than see those dreams to their conclusion and to their absolute fulfillment. Something I spoke about last year, that Yosef allows himself to feel compassion for people, even if that compassion for others may delay, or in this case, derail the fulfillment of his own dreams, of his own passions. And of course, the tremendous, tremendous embarrassment, mortification of the brothers. Chazal talk about the brothers' inability to answer Yosef. They couldn't even respond when he reveals himself. They were just so mortified by the hypocrisy. Sometimes hypocrisy just overpowers us, because every hypocrite establishes a dual reality, the reality that he lives and the true reality. The reality he lives is the artificial one, the one he presents or promotes to others, in some cases to himself. And then there's the ultimate reality, which we know exists, but we like to deny, we like to ignore, we like to lie about. Of course, we lie loudest when we lie to ourselves. And then when the real reality rears its head and appears to us, some cases we've denied it, in some cases we've just ignored it, we lose our breath, because we've been living a world that just isn't true. We've been living presumptions that aren't true. And Chazal speak about Yosef's brothers. They developed their own reality. Their brother was dead. Their brother was gone. Perhaps they had accused him of being the guilty party, and of course he wasn't around to defend themselves. And they had justified their action. At least they made their peace with a brother who was dead and no longer part of their world. And 20-plus years later, all of a sudden Yosef appears to them, and everything they assumed was wrong. All the hypocrisy, all the assumptions that they had taken about their role and Yosef's role. And Chazal likened this to the Yom HaDin, when a person goes up to Shemayim, and you see the truth of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you really feel mortified. Why did I make such silly decisions? Because in this earth, we justify our decisions. We make peace with our mediocrity. We accept our failures. We justify them to ourselves. We're all brilliant at self-justification. But when we see we could have been, we see the ultimate truth of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we feel legitimately demoralized at what could have been or should have been. And Chazal bemoan and point us to the episode of Vayigash. Oy lanu liyom hadin, Chazal say. Oy lanu liyom hatochacha. Woe is to a person when he ascends to Shemayim. Woe is to a person when he faces the ultimate tochacha of Hashem. If Yosef's brothers were left speechless and breathless in his presence, and Yosef, of course, is a mere mortal, what will human beings feel when they're standing in front of the Melech Malchayim Lachem for the ultimate unveiling, or becoming naked of all of these lies that we feed ourselves incessantly? So there's a lot of drama in the Parsha, but there's really one steadying force in the Parsha, and that person has been a steadying force throughout much of these last three sections of Sefer Bereishis, Vayeshev, Miketz, and Vayigash. And it really is an emergence of someone who becomes destined for glory in Am Yisrael, the Shevet of Yehuda. Because it's obvious that Reuven should have been a leader, because he was the Bechor. And of course, his leadership is compromised by many things. First of all, by his his butting into other people's business, his invasion of other people's privacy, particularly in the case of Yaakov, where when Rachel dies and Yaakov plans to spend the time now with Bilhah instead of Leah, he feels legitimately insulted. But instead of redressing the situation through discussion, through negotiation, through raising awareness, he right away rearranges his father's sleeping pattern so that his father should be with Leah rather than with Bilhah. And this is just not an area of anyone's private life that anyone else should butt into, and certainly not a child. And then, of course, the great failure of Reuven's inability to fully rescue Yosef. He presents or provides partial rescue, but doesn't really see the act through to its conclusion and returns too late after Yosef has already been sold. So Reuven's leadership has been disqualified. But the next natural candidate would have been Yosef, and for a while Yosef flirts with becoming that great leader. He's a man of dreams, a man of charisma, a man of great potential, a man of great leadership. But we don't really see Yehuda. Yehuda, as it were, flies under the radar. If anything, he falls off of the grid, because twice in Parshas Vayeshev, twice he falls off of the grid. Once because he's the driving force behind this profit-driven sale of Yosef for sets of shoes. And second of all, when he basically commits incest with his daughter-in-law. He doesn't know she's his daughter-in-law, but at the very least, she's a prostitute in Yehuda's eyes. And Yehuda's leadership only emerges really in Parshas Miketz and in Parshas Vayigash, and ultimately, as we see Yaakov coronating Yehuda as the king in Parshas Vayichi. So, to a degree, Vayigash really highlights Yehuda, and that's why the Parsha begins, Vayigash Elav Yehuda Vayomer Bi Hashem. And there really are two differences between Yosef and between Yehuda. One is that Yehuda performs something, ironically, which Yosef never performed, and that's why he's chosen as a leader. For all of his heroism, for all of his courage in Mitzrayim, for all of his conviction, Yosef never fails. Yosef never commits a sin. There's some moral questions about Yosef's behavior. Sensitivity to his father's suffering, exploitation of the brothers in Parshas Vayigash and Miketz. But none of these are actual sins. As I mentioned before, Yehuda commits a sin. And this is cohabitation with, at the very least, someone he knows to be a zona. Ultimately, someone who proves to be his very own daughter-in-law. This is a very, very low moment in Yehuda's career. And The purpose of Yehuda's selection is that a leader has to be someone that understands the darkness of the human condition, the dark side of humanity, that human beings are not perfect, that they can fail, that they're weak, that they have needs and desires and cowardices, and someone who's squeaky clean like Yosef HaTzadik sometimes has a hard time understanding that, understanding how to help people, how to move people from that moment of darkness and failure and bring them hope and dreams and recovery and resilience. And Yehuda's a Baal Tshuva. And ultimately, Malachim have to interact with leaders and princes and noblemen, but as we see in Shlomo HaMelech, with the margins of society and those who are helpless and hapless and prostitutes, as in the case of Shlomo giving that famous ruling. So Yehuda's chosen precisely because he understands the fragility of the human condition. Sometimes, of course, one should never court faith. One should never invite or welcome chayt. I want to be a leader. I want to be able to understand the varieties of the human condition. Let me try to sin so that I'll understand the full sweep. Chas v'shalom. A person should never, never, ever initiate chayt, so to speak, for some higher purpose. There is no sense of avera lishma. A person can willfully sin in order to better understand the human condition, to better understand the self. But in retrospect, we've all fallen. In retrospect, we've all failed. And sometimes that discourages us. How can I inspire others? How can I teach others? How can I be a role model to others? Whether it's in a formal sense to be a rav or a counselor, or in an informal sense just to try to inspire others. You feel like, I don't want to be hypocritical, or maybe I'm not a good role model. And ultimately, you shouldn't be a hypocrite, and you should work on your own ability and your own interests. And some people mask their own insufficiencies and their own ineptitudes by trying to lead others. Well, I can't make my own life in order, then at least let me try to change other people's life, and that will give me a full sense of achievement and of accomplishment. But assuming there's a sincere and integral sense of really trying to affect people, people need real human leaders. People need to sense there's understanding on the other side. There's a real, live, human face. There's a story of a chassid that gets thrown into jail, and they call the Rebbe. And the Rebbe comes in and says, don't worry, I'll take care of you, I'll help you. And he walks him out of jail. And then a couple of weeks later, the chassid gets thrown into jail again. And they call the Rebbe, and the Rebbe says, look, you obviously have an addiction and a weakness. Come, I'll take care of you, I understand. I have weaknesses also. Don't worry, you can recover, there's always tomorrow. And a few weeks later, the same chassid gets tossed in jail a third time. And the Rebbe comes in yet a third time and comforts and provides solace to the chassid. And then at a certain point, the Rebbe dies. And the chassid, a few months after the Rebbe's death, gets tossed into jail a fourth time. And they call for the Rebbe, and of course the Rebbe is dead. So they say, send the Rebbe's son, who's the successor of the Rebbe. And the son comes in with his guns blazing, screaming at the chassid, you outcast, you're an embarrassment to me, you're an embarrassment to my father's memory, to our chassidus. How dare you? How dare you dishonor my father? He's so sensitive to your needs, and yet you betray him with your activity, with your behavior. Rotten jail, the Rebbe's son, the new Rebbe says, until you realize the evil of your life. Breaks down and starts crying. He says, you don't understand. I'm not a tzaddik. I'm a rasha. I have weaknesses. Your father, he was a rebbe for Rishayim. You're a rebbe for tzaddikim. I don't need you. It's easy to be a rebbe for tzaddikim. I need a rebbe for Rishayim. I need a rebbe who understands what human beings really are. So Yehuda has the ability to be a rebbe for tzaddikim and ultimately also a rebbe for Rishayim. That's why he's chosen. To understand that everyone has a little bit of a tzaddik in them and a little bit of a rush in them, and not to just hold up one perfect reality and assume that everyone's going to reach that, but to slowly but surely and confidently embrace human beings and give them hope and hopefully build them slowly and gradually. So that's one reason that Yehuda's leadership is preferred over Yosef. But the second reason is very evident in Vayigash. Yosef dreams. Yosef tries to manipulate reality to meet those dreams. Yosef has a predetermined sense of what his dreams are and how he'll lead men. Yehuda's not a dreamer. Yehuda's a responder. Yehuda just responds to situations, to crisis, when there's need for someone to take, and listen to the next word because it's related, responsibility. Responsibility is a person that responds to situations they couldn't have foreseen or predicted, but situations of crisis, of need, and they take responsibility, accountability. I will be the one. I will be the one, he tells Yaakov, to personally guarantee Binyamin's safe return. Anochi ervenu, miyadi tivakshenu. I guarantee. You can ask him. Reuven offered his two children to die if Binyamin wouldn't return. Yaakov's not interested in people who delegate or defer responsibilities to others. Reuven says, my two sons will die. Yaakov says, that doesn't convince me. But Yehuda says, I will be personally responsible. And boy, does that convince Yaakov. In fact, it resonates deeply with Yaakov because years earlier, when Laban accused Yaakov of cooking the books, of stealing some of his animals, so Yaakov retorted. He said, I worked for you for 20 years, Bereishis Lamed Aleph. Any animals who died, any animals who were killed by marauding wolves or lions, Anochi Achatanu, I absorbed the loss. Mi Yadit Vakshenu, you could come to me and ask where that animal or the reparation was. So when Yehuda promises Yaakov, Anochi Ervenu, I will be responsible, Mi Yadit Vakshenu, Yaakov basically sees himself. And that's real leadership, not leadership with charisma, not leadership with inspiration, but quiet leadership based on behavior. People see your behavior, see you taking responsibility, accountability. You take action when there's need. You're the one who's happy to perform tasks. If something that has to be done, I'll perform it. I'll be the one. I'll take responsibility to be, as they call it in Israel, a Rosh Gadol. I won't have to come back and ask you every little detail. What should I do and how should I do it? Trust me. It will get done. And if there's a bump in the road, I'll find a way to solve that problem. And I'll show resourcefulness and ingenuity and problem-solving skills. That's what Yehuda time and again demonstrates. In the end of Parshas Miketz, when the brothers are discovered and the cup of Yosef is discovered, and they want to imprison Binyamin. So Yehuda steps forward. And he says, Ata Yeshin Abdecha Tachas Hanar, Eved La Adoni, Nanar Yael Imechav, Yael Imechav. I will stand here. I will be the one. Be'ikash Yelav Yehuda. Yehuda is the one that Yaakov sends in the end of the Parsha to Goshen to prepare things, whether it's to prepare yeshiva, as Chazal say, or just to prepare. Yehuda never dreams of any tomorrow. He doesn't have that prescient vision. But he's someone who has broad shoulders and knows how to step up and step in a moment of crisis, whether it's a major or dramatic crisis as the one which imperils the family, or just day-to-day needs. Day-to-day, I'll take it, I'll do it, I'll solve the problem. Sometimes we shy away from responsibility taking, from task performance, and rather be lazy, let others. And true leaders are people that are happy and eager to fulfill missions and tasks. And that happiness and eagerness and efficiency in performing those tasks rub off on other people and demonstrate leadership to other people. Remember, for Yehuda, for Yosef, clothing is a sign of attraction, of color, of flair. And the wife of Potiphar is attracted to Yosef's clothing. And in that moment of very, very sexually charged emotion, she's holding on to Yosef's garment as he runs away from her, nobly running away from her. In the very same parsha in Vayeshev, Yehuda's garments are not colorful. They don't attract attention of females or of others. They don't attract jealousy of others. But when Tamar, this would-be prostitute, asks Yehuda for some guarantee of the money he owes her, he says, what should I give as collateral? She says, how about your tzilcha, your clothing? She's not running after his clothing because she's attracted to the way they look. She just wants some responsibility. And Yehuda is able to take responsibility. And the real difference between Yosef and Yehuda is demonstrated in how people view their clothing and what role their clothing plays in Parshas Vayeshev. So Yehuda's leadership is selected throughout these parshas for two reasons. Number one, because he's a Baal Teshuva, who understands that human beings are weak. Number two, because Yehuda is a leader who responds and takes responsibility, not a leader who dreams of realities which may or may not occur. Shabbat Shalom.